Welcome to another episode of the Decent Rowing Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about balance, what we do with the blades, as well as some exercises to help you improve balance both in a sculling and a sweep boat. This little series of podcasts we've been doing has been going through the information on one of the pages on our website, decentrowing.com, and it's under the heading of balance. So we've already been through sweep balance, sculling balance, as well as some fundamentals. And today we're just going to round it out with talking a little bit more specifically about what we do with the blades and some other exercises. So when we're talking about blade work, what's the first thing that comes to mind for you, Ken, when we're thinking about balance?
Well, the critical thing really is to make sure that you end up with the blades not being uneven through the boat. So if you're in either sculling or sweep, you want to make sure that the handle heights for all of the athletes are the same right the way through the recovery in particular. When the blades are in the water, then generally the balance will be fine. But again, you need to be a little careful to make sure that there's not too much blade depth or not too little blade depth, so you want everyone buried to the same extent. The critical step, of course, is to make sure that the bodies are in the centre of the boat and that no one's trying to balance the boat with their body. But once you get that out of the way, then the blades are a really useful way to make fine adjustments to the balance of a boat simply by lifting your hands or dropping them a little bit. The difficulty becomes if everyone tries to balance the boat themselves rather than doing it as a crew, because if you find one athlete's trying to balance the boat and one way and another athlete's trying to balance it the other way, then you just end up with this tussle that ends up never achieving a balanced boat. So they're very small movements with the oars to keep a balanced boat and mostly on the recovery.
Yeah, and with the movements, it's the way I like to think about making the changes is at the finish. So you're doing one little change per stroke. You're not doing 10 changes of your hand height on the way forward to try and balance the boat. Because what inevitably happens is people think they're doing small movements, but if you get 8 people in the crew all making their own little small movements, taking it upon themselves to balance the boat, what usually happens is a few of the movements overlap and they sort of amplify into a bigger movement, which often has a detrimental effect on the balance of the boat. So, yeah, the small different changes in hand heights, I'd just say just make a small adjustment, just do it once throughout the stroke and all at the same time in the crew. You don't want people making their own adjustments on the way forward, because inevitably they end up making a bigger adjustment than's necessary, and that in turn causes the boat to become unbalanced.
Yeah, you find also that when people make an adjustment like that and the boat does become unbalanced, even if it's only a little bit, then someone else in the crew will think that the boat's unbalanced and they'll try and do the opposite to correct it. And then you just end up with this back and forth fight and the boat's never balanced. So, as you say, keep the movements really small, and I agree completely, only try and adjust one thing at a time. And do it as a crew. So don't talk about it talk to the other crew members about it and make sure that you're all trying to achieve the same outcome. Big movements are what will cause damage to the boat. The other thing that happens with handle heights is you find that how people go into the water and out of the water is very important. If you find that people are tapping in and out, so they're tapping out very aggressively, then that causes issues. If they're tapping out at a different time, that causes issues, and the same with putting the blade into the water. So I'd suggest a good drill to work on getting that part right is to have the crew sit with a balance boat and do taps out at the finish to make sure they're doing it all together. And so tap it out cleanly and then with the hands moving away and then rock over. And so if you do that drill where you tap it out and then rock over, then you'll find that you can get people working very well together and getting the blade out of the water at the same time. If someone taps out late, so they've got power on the oar before they tap out and other people in the boat don't, then that's going to unbalance the boat very quickly. So working on getting everyone together at the finish, I think, is a really good way of doing it.
Yeah, and sort of building on that, a lot of people, especially since there's been stroke side and bow side, there's always been this divide about who has the boat down on what side. So, you know, stroke side will say it's always down on their side, bow side will say it's always down on their side. And you sort of get this blame game between the sides trying to establish what a balanced boat is. And so I think it's important for both the coach and the coxswain in an eight especially to defined to the crew when the boat is balanced, so people can adjust their own expectations of what they need to do with their blade work. So there's the overall balance of the boat, you know, which rigger you want to have, basically equal distance to the rigger, from the rigger to the water on both sides. But then on top of that, you have the individual members of the crew that need to adjust their hand heights to suit where their blade needs to be. And a lot of times when they think it's down on their side, they're probably not carrying their hands low enough in the boat on the recovery, and so they're hitting the water and upsetting the balance and also complaining. So you have to make sure that it's actually down on one side before you ask the crew to make changes. It could just be a few athletes in the boat that don't quite understand what they need to do as individuals to keep their blade off the water on that recovery.
Yeah, a useful drill you can use for that as well is getting people together is when they tap out and they're coming forward in a sweep boat, then you can ask them to pause when they've got their body rocked over and put the oar on the gunwale. And once they've got it on the gunwale, then they'll get a better understanding of everyone working together. Another way of doing it is to have them pause at the finish. Now, mind you, this is a drill, but what it can do is it gets people together at one point in the boat so that they're all moving at the same time. So a pausing at the finish drill will quite often get the boat to run well, and it'll get the athletes to understand that exiting the water is very important. Another thing that's important for them to understand is where their handle height should be as they come down the slide. And so what I suggest you do, a very simple drill, is to have them sit with their oar flat on the water at a point where their body's rocked over. And then have a couple of people sit out and balance the boat and have everyone else take their oar off the water by just pushing down with their hands until you get them at the optimal height, and ask them to individually mark in their mind how high above the gunwale that is, or how high above their knees, or how high above the deck. And so once they've got that clearly in their mind, then when they're rowing along, you want to make sure that that's where they put their hand coming down the recovery. Often you'll find that people don't pay attention to it, and you'll have some athletes with their hands lower in the boat and some higher in the boat, and some of them, even worse, moving between high and low as they're coming down the slide, and that's guaranteed to upset the balance of the boat.
Yeah, so one of the good ways of making people aware, at least, of what their blade's doing, because sometimes they can't actually see it. The one thing you can do is you get them to look at their blade, you know, for a certain amount of strokes, just to see what it's actually doing. And I'd recommend athletes do keep an eye on their blade work from time to time, looking out of the boat, which, you know, I know is not typically a very popular opinion, but you're not doing it all the time. You're not doing every stroke. You're just doing it enough so you can get a good calibration of what you're doing right or what you're doing wrong. The worst thing you can do is, you know, blindly just keep your eyes on the boat and make mistakes with your blade work constantly. The other thing that I found particularly helpful with my rowing, keeping the hands at a certain height, is trying to feel the pressure in the hands of the blades when they're out of the water. So on the handles, so you want to keep a constant pressure all the way to the catch. So that basically that tells your body that you're not pushing down, so increasing the pressure on your hands and making your blade go up in the air, and you're not releasing the pressure on your handles and making the blade go towards the water. Because you need to keep plenty of height, plenty of distance between your feathered blade and the water so you can square up without actually having to lower your hands in the boat. Because, you know, when that happens, obviously, you lower your hands in the boat, your hands are on the way down as you square up. That's combined with the wind effect that's on the blade, pushes it up in the air, called skying the blade, and then inevitably you end up missing the catch because it's on its way up, it's not on its way down. You want to be on your way down to the catch as you square up.
When you're squaring up too, it's important not to leave yourself enough room with the oar off the water to square without actually pushing the oar down into the bottom of the boat. If you're someone who has their blade too close to the water when they're coming down the slide, then in order to square up, you have to put downward pressure on the blade to get it further off the water, which can turn into skying the blade. But even if it's not skying the blade, what happens, that downward pressure is going to push that side of the boat down. And so if your oars are too close to the water coming down the slide, then you're going to unbalance the boat simply by pushing down on the handle to get the oar higher in the air so that you can square it up. So making sure that everyone in the crew is squaring together and that they're not having to push their hands down into the boat in order to square is very important for balance, because the boat, that particular movement happens at the catch when people feel generally unstable in the boat in any case, and so it just adds to the problem. So if you can make sure that the blades are the right height off the water so you can square without having to change the height, then that's a very important skill to get done early.
Yeah, and one of the drills that I like for that sort of exercise is a slap catch. It might sound a bit odd, but basically because you're trying to make the blade slap at the catch, so you have it feathered all the way to the catch, and instead of squaring up and placing in the water, you just leave it feathered, and from the normal height of your recovery, you lift up with the hands and slap that feathered blade down on the water and then quickly square it up and take the stroke. And so it really makes the catch a very definite movement, and it's a downward movement as well. It's not an up and then downward movement. So it sort of gives you an idea of what your handle path should be doing. Obviously, when you're rowing along normally, you're going to be squaring up and placing downward, but the slap catch really helps you make it a positive downward movement at the catch instead of a up then down movement.
You find that that also has the effect on timing, because you want to hear one particular slap all at once so that the timing of the crew can be better put in play there. And if, in fact, you combine a slap catch with a pause or a hesitation at the finish, then you'll find that the bookends of the stroke pretty much, then you can get a crew working well together because they do the slap catch at the catch, so they know they're all together because they hear just one slap, not half a dozen. And when they come into the, when they get to the finish, if they tap out together and momentarily hesitate, then they'll notice that they're all together at that point. So slap catches combined with a pause at the finish is a useful drill to be able to make sure you bookended the stroke correctly. Another thing that has a fair impact on how well you tap out, particularly for those of us that row in cold climates, is what sort of clothing you're wearing. You might think that clothing doesn't have much to do with balance, but it certainly does. If you've got bulky clothing, especially around your stomach area, then when you tap out, there's two things that happen. The first one is that you can sometimes get caught up in your clothing, and that's clearly not going to be of help in having a balanced and controlled boat. And the other thing that can happen too is that you tend to tap out earlier if you've got bulky clothing on, so you have less angle at the finish. And so you'll find with bulky clothing, then it's quite easy for you to change how you row. And so if you have some people in the boat that are wearing bulky clothing and some people that are wearing tight clothing, then you may find you get an imbalance simply because of what they're wearing. So in those of working in cold climates, rowing in cold climates, and I'd suggest just be very mindful that wearing a loose top over the top of your rowing zooty when you're out training is not a good idea. Much better to have a few layers of tight material, and have, even I've seen people with 3 or 4 or 5 layers of clothing, but it's all quite tight on the body, which means that it's not going to interfere with your finish. And having everyone finish at the same time is very important, because that's when the balance usually gets upset.
Yeah, and just following on from that, if you've got someone who carries a lot of extra abdominal fat, it has the same effect at the finish. So yeah, it makes it a lot harder to tap out. And anyone who's rowed with, you know, a reasonable gut like I have, and also without one, knows that it makes a huge difference when it comes to the finish and how clean and easy it is around the back turn to make that movement.
Yeah, and often you'll find that the finish is where the boat gets out of balance to start with, and usually it's because someone's doing something different. So a few drills that you can use to improve that, one is that pause or hesitation at the finish, just so tap out and just hesitate for a moment to make sure that everyone's together. And every crew I've worked with that type of drill, they like the drill because they feel like they're more together. So I think that's a useful drill for that. The other thing that's useful here too to understand is that if there's power on, for example, stroke side and not on bow side at the finish, i.e. the stroke side people are holding their blades in a little better, then you'll find that that's going to flip the boat over towards bow side. An easy way to demonstrate this is with a one side squared, one side feather drill. And if you alternate strokes, and it takes a while for the crew to get used to it. But if you have one side squared and one side feathered and then swap over on the next stroke, then you'll usually find that the feathered side is the side where the boat drops. So at the finish, the boat will drop to the feathered side. The reason for that is because the people on the feathered side aren't holding their blades in the water square to finish the stroke off. They're starting to finish the stroke off early and rolling their blade out. So a useful drill for dealing with that is a delayed feather drill, where you have them have them row with the blade square and then tap it out of the water and then feather it, and making sure they don't feather it out of the water. And indeed, we want to row like that, essentially. We want to keep the power on right to the finish to get the kinetic energy out of the oar as it straightens, and then tap out and then feather. Now, if you can get people to do that really well, then you'll find you tend to get faster boats. Also, you'll find that in a sculling boat, you can do the same thing. It takes a little bit more control of the athlete because they're feathering one side or squaring the other. But it's a really good way for them to understand when they're not holding the blade in the water right to the finish. And so one side square, one side feather in a sculling boat is a very useful drill, although it's a little bit hard to do to start with.
Yeah, on that holding the blade through to the finish, you have to be careful when you're looking at athletes to try and judge who is holding their blade through to the finish and who isn't. So some people might get to the finish a lot quicker than some who don't, and it might not be necessarily a product of them holding their blade through. Maybe they're holding their finish through well. Maybe they're just missing a bit of their catch. So that the athletes might be getting to the catch, not placing the blade at the furthest point, not getting locked on nice and quickly, and therefore when they do get their blade in the water, they've probably already used some of their slide, some of their effective drive phase. And so they're trying to do less work than the people who've got their blade placed at the opportune moment right out at the catch. So they're going to get to the finish a lot quicker. And so when you're looking for these problems, it can be at the finish especially, it's always useful to go to the catch and see what they're doing there and see what they're doing with their blade height under the water. So if they've got their blades really shallow, they're going to get through to the finish a lot quicker. If they've got their blades really deep, they're going to take a longer time to get to the finish, and therefore if the rest of the crew is doing something different, they might become out of time. One of the good things about a pause at the finish is it's a good spot if you're going to put a pause into the stroke to get everyone together. It's a really good spot to do it. Obviously you don't want to do it at the catch because you're changing direction very quickly, and it's not very useful when you come up to like race pace. If you're very good at pausing at the catch, it's not as useful as if you're pausing at the finish, because a pause at the finish, you can just get rid of at race pace. So it's a very good start and end to the stroke. And so if your crew is having a lot of trouble getting their balance right and they're not rowing together very well, a pause at the finish. So what we're talking about there is basically a pause after they've tapped down and feathered. They haven't moved their hands away. They haven't rocked their bodies over. And they're just pausing at the finish. So probably generally speaking, if the crew's having a lot of trouble getting together, do more of a pause at the finish. And if you're one of the coaches who likes a good flowing back turn, just simply get them to reduce that pause step by step. And as long as they're getting the catches in well, you'll get a crew that starts rowing together well. And even some of the elite crews still have row at low rates for the pause at the finish. They find it's a very good reference point for them. And what they do well is they row together and they're sort of locked into a good rhythm when they do it like this. So it's a bit of personal preference, but it definitely has a good place for bringing a crew together, making them feel together, getting them in time, and also helping with the balance.
And if you're one of those coaches or athletes that doesn't really like pausing at the finish as a technique on a full-time basis, then use it as a drill, though. Use it as a drill to make sure that you're together as you come out of the water. And if you want to have another place to pause that does this a very similar thing, then I'd pause with your at rock over. So the finish, hands away, rock over, and then pause. So it's sort of a pause after rock over as distinct from one at the finish. But as Lachlan says, it's very much a personal preference which one or how you use these together. But I'd suggest that both have their uses.
Yeah, for me personally, I'm a big advocate of a flowing back turn and still am to some extent. You know, I was completely anti-pausing at the finish. I hated it. I just didn't like the way it felt when I was rowing. But, you know, I gave it as because, you know, a couple of the crews I was rowing in were, you know, adamant that a pause at the finish was the right thing to do. So obviously I had to teach myself how to do that pause. And after a session of doing this in my single, just, you know, religiously pausing for, you know, maybe half a second. It's not a big pause, but it's a definite stop at the finish. I could really feel different aspects of my stroke improving. For example, instead of my finish being like a bit rushed when I was flowing around the back turn, I mean, I didn't feel rushed when I was doing it. You wouldn't say I was rushed, but because I actually had the time to tap out and I knew I wasn't going anywhere, I could do a better job of keeping that oar locked and in the water. So it's a particularly good drill for just giving yourself that extra time at the finish to get the extraction right. And I found that my extraction, like getting the blade out of the water, was much cleaner when I had a pause. And after I'd done that as an exercise for a whole training session, my stroke was better around the finish especially. I think the catch was kind of similar. Maybe if you're in a crew boat, you'd see bigger, you know, combined increases because you're getting the crew to row together. But in the single, I think it was definitely the finish that got better. That said, it's definitely the way I don't want to row. I really like the flowing movement, but I think pausing at the finish made my rowing stroke better, and I could see it as a useful tool for crews to do on a regular basis, and I don't see it as detrimental for them to do continually, like I've seen some of the advanced crews do.
Yeah, I think one of the things about pausing at the finish too is if you're using pausing at the finish as a full-time mechanism and you do it frequently when you're at a low rating, then that means you have to come into the catch a little faster, which also means that you have to have a very good catch. So with pausing at the finish as a technique, just be mindful that if you pause at the finish and you don't have a good catch, then you're likely to do damage to the boat run at the catch. So just use it with care.
It's generally a technique for more advanced crews to do and more advanced rollers to do and see it as like an advanced toolkit. Unless you're using it for timing, in which case it can be done by beginner crews. But like as Ken said, if you're doing it on a full-time basis, you need to understand what these crews are doing well at an elite level. And what they're doing really well is an amazing catch. You know, they come into the catch quickly, but they come in cleanly. They get the blade placed at the right time and then get on quickly with the leg drive. Now, most junior crews, if they pause at the finish, will rush into the catch, sky the blade, miss the first half of the slide, barely get their blade in the water before the finish, and it'll just be terrible for boat speed. So it's important to understand the limitations of a drill like this and when it should be used and can be used to its best advantage.
Mm. No, I agree completely. And I see people in school level trying to copy what elite rowers at a national, international level are doing, and you've always got to be a little bit careful with that because these rowers at that level have a different skill set. So just be very mindful of that. I agree completely. Another thing that's important too in trying to keep your balance under control is you need to be relaxed. You need to be connected with the boat so your muscles are turned on, so you're not tense, but your muscles are engaged, so you're connected to the boat. But you really need to have a relaxed grip. It's very difficult to do the fine motor movements needed to control oar heights if you're really tense. So as another drill I'd suggest is ask the athletes to row with a deliberate relaxed grip. And the simplest way to do this in a sculling boat would be to make sure that they're holding the oar essentially in their fingertips when they're coming on down on the recovery. So you can see that they're not tense and not gripping the oar tightly. Same thing applies in a sweep boat, but it's really just making sure that they've got a loose grip, because a relaxed grip, it gives you much more control over what's going on with the blade.
Yeah, if the way I think about it is you want to have a grip as relaxed as possible so that, you know, 99% of the time if you hit the water by accident, you're still going to be able to hold on to that oar, or maybe 95%, but no higher. Obviously, you don't want to ever lose your oar when you're rowing, especially sculling, single scull, or in a race. So you have to make that judgment, but you don't want to be holding the oar any tighter than you absolutely have to. It's a waste of energy, and it'll be detrimental for the finer movements of your technique, like squaring, feathering, you know, things like that.
Another thing that's important when you understanding where the boat sits to be balanced is to do some drills where you stationary in the boat so that the boat's not moving, and be able to keep the boat balanced and understand what fine movements can do. So, for example, if you're sitting in a scull, it's quite easy to do because you're in control of it all. But if you're just sitting in a sweep boat or a sculling boat, a quad, 8, 4, whatever, then I'd suggest have some of the crew move their hands up and down so they understand what actually happens to the balance. So if you had, for example, in an 8, two people sit out and balance the boat, but not balance it really solidly, just balance it so that it's just balanced, and if someone does a bad movement or a movement, then the boat will move. And then ask each of the athletes to just lift their hands a little or drop their hands a little bit one at a time, and you'll see that they'll then understand quite clearly how dramatic a movement of the hands can be on the balance of the boat, particularly if it's a sharp, dramatic movement of the hands. So it's good to practice that. Roll-up drills are another good one for understanding balance, where you tap it out and when the boat's stationary and come into the catch and place the blade, and that's another good way for people to understand what affects balance and what doesn't. I'd strongly suggest that they try and control the balance with their oar and maybe a little bit with their feet in that process, but not by wobbling their knees around. So they're useful drills to do that. On the website, we've got a particular video that's quite useful for particular sculling, where it's called balance exercises. And what they are, there's a series of exercises you can do in a single scull where you start off just sitting in the scull and rocking it back and forth, and then you graduate to standing up in the scull and moving the boat around. And those sort of drills are really useful, particularly for beginners, because it gives them a lot of confidence. Firstly, when you sit in a scull, you think that it's very unstable and you don't really understand the power that the oars have to control the balance in a boat and to keep it as a safe, stable platform. So I suggest, if you can, get all scullers to go through that set of drills, because they really will improve their balance, their understanding of what makes the boat balanced, and give them a lot of confidence in sitting in a sculling boat.
With the roll-up drill, it's a really good drill, just because when the boat's stationary, it's at its most vulnerable for tipping over. And so any crew that can do a roll-up, so basically all sit at the finish with their blades buried in the water, square and buried, you know, the coxswain will say row, or one of the rowers will say row, and you tap the blades out, come forward to the catch, everyone with their blades off the water, the boat completely stationary, place a blade and go off. There's not many things that are better to show how much a crew is in control of the balance and how they've gelled together as a crew. And it's really, if you can do that with your crew and someone else can't, it's very intimidating for them, and vice versa. And so when you're starting off, a lot of, you know, some depending on where you are, like in Australia, a lot of the times when we start off rowing, we start at the finish. We basically do a roll up every time, so tap out, square, all come forward, place the blade, and then move along. And so if a crew can do that from stationary, it shows that they've worked out how to tap down together, how to get the handle heights at the right height, how to come forward without upsetting the boat, and place the blade. So that's why roll-ups are a very good way of, one, testing how well your crews come together, and two, practicing that movement and getting yourself ready for a rowing stroke. And if a crew can do roll-ups successfully, then they're pretty much going to guaranteed of a good balanced row when they set off. So it's a very good activity to do, especially in calm water, before training sessions, you know, after training sessions, as like a bit of a warm-up or a cool-down. I'd recommend trying to include some, if you've got time, into what you do. And you know, at some point they won't make you any faster, but for probably 95% of crews, So people that haven't reached an elite status, it's going to be very beneficial for their rowing.
Yeah, I'd suggest also add a few roll-ups into your warm-up routine when you're on the water. Get yourself generally warmed up first on land or water or both, and then do a few roll-ups. The purpose of it in that space is not just because it's a good drill to do, but what it does, it tends to warm up your brain, and it makes your brain understand the movements that are required and gets it used to the sequence in the rowing stroke and getting more connected with what the boat's doing. So it's a good warm-up for the brain. The other thing you can do too, if you happen to have a coxswain in the boat, particularly a stern cox boat, then the coxswain can add a huge amount of value to that particular process, because they can see what the blades are doing, and then they can make sure that the crew members that aren't using their blades in the correct way, then they can remind them and make sure that everyone does it together. Another little trick you can do as a coxswain with tapping out is to rest your knees against the side of the boat, and you'll find that if one side is, or one person is tapping out earlier than the others, you tend to feel it through your knees. And you can do that in a bow cox boat if you can get your knees up to the side. But generally in a stern cox boat, like an 8, it's a very good way to tell if someone's tapping out early or not. So a coxswain can be really very useful in making sure that the crew have their blade heights at the right level, their catch is the right level, they're not skying the blade. All of those items can be easily seen from a coxswain's seat in an 8, for example.
So if you want to check out any of the videos we've been referring to in this podcast, you can head to our website, decentrowing.com, and log in or sign up. So for people who aren't paying members, we have a 1 week free trial. After that, you can decide whether or not you want to become a paying member. Obviously, we really appreciate people who sign up as paying members, because they allow us to keep building on our resource and making it better for everyone. So until next time, happy rowing.